The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Yes, it does. Settles right in your soul. This is Terry Raposa and Wynn Carpenter. We are here with Jefferson State of Mind. How are you, buddy?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm good, I think.
No dream, aren't we? Are we all living the dream?
We are, and we're here also with Citizen Tim. Hey, Citizen Tim.
Good morning, Tim.
How are you, buddy?
I'm well.
Good. And Tim Saunders will be our man on the street, so to speak. We'll be talking to him a bit in the second half hour. The first half hour, we're expecting a call from Laura Hobbs. She's with her dad right now, and we send our prayers and love to her, and hopefully she'll call in a bit. And Christina, our producer, how are you, Christina?
Hello, happy Sunday morning.
Happy Sunday. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Yes, I agree. Happy Father's Day. I'm sorry, I'm trying to not remember about this day, unfortunately.
Oh, that's right. God bless your dad.
Thank you. But I really appreciate you, and I think you're all good dads, and all of you are part of my family.
Aww. Cool. That's so sweet.
You too, darling. You too. So anyway, we'll be talking with Laura here in a bit, and hopefully she'll call in. We're going to be talking about her court case. We're streaming live on KCNR1460.com, and we're broadcasting live on 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, 1460 AM, and we archive forever.
And ever.
And ever.
Amen.
So you can go back to it, listen to it, share it with your friends. Before we get into talking about Laura's court case, you know, we had a couple of discussions we heard on the last program, and I think they were good, except we have to understand that the ROV, I really like the idea of the ROV being appointed by the Board of Supervisors at this point. And the reason is that, as Kevin said, and he's right about this, that a lot of people think Kathy Darling Allen is some kind of legend. And unfortunately, a lot of folks out there aren't privy to what happened in what we're going to talk about as far as Laura's case. A lot of people aren't privy as to what happened. John Knight had some great testimony that he's had on what he went through, trying to just get a look as an observer. You know, Rich Gallardo made a lot of great statements and made a lot of good points about how he was restricted in his observing. But a lot of times, if you just go out there, people aren't going to know these things, and don't know these things, aren't going to be able to make an intelligent decision. I'm not saying that people can't make a decision like that, but the jurisdiction is that of the Board of Supervisors, and I would think if we got somebody that they selected in with their jurisdiction, they could interpose and nullify that position and get somebody else. Am I right about that?
Amen. Yeah. Now, and okay, when you're talking about her being a legend, she's a legend in Sacramento and she's a legend in Washington D.C. Need I say more?
Yeah, she's a legend of George Soros.
Yeah. So
she got invited to speak.
Certainly not a legend for the true patriots of Shasta County.
Mm-hmm. Talking about true patriots and people who may become legends, we have Laura Hobbs on the line. Laura, how are you, my dear?
Morning. I'm well, thank you.
Good. So we're just beginning to get into your case here, and you can give people a little bit of the background, and then we want an update on what's going on at this time, whatever you can give us. So the party's yours, my dear.
Thank you. So the background is that this case was decided by 14 votes. There was 14 votes that would have enabled me to go on to a runoff in November. There was a lot of problems with the way they conducted this election. They did not apply the random alphabet mandated by the Secretary of State. which would have afforded me the first position on the ballot instead of the third position on the ballot. The first position gives you an advantage of between 3 to 5%, which in the District 2 race would have been upwards of 500 votes, just by the mere fact of being listed first in the name of candidates on the ballot. So that's a big part of what's at issue. We had testimony by election observers as well that were not able to properly witness and observe the election. They could not see the ballots. They could not hear what the election workers were doing. So there was issues of malconduct on that end as well. And that's what the case is about. I feel really confident. Joanna Francesca, the deputy ROV, was on the witness stand as well during the last few days of hearings. And right now, as it stands, the trial will continue on the 25th at 9 a.m.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that I know the answer to, and everybody in this room knows the answer to, but why is Long named as the defendant in the case?
That was just merely a technicality. The way the law is written and the way it's stated is if you want to contest an election, you must list your opponent, your running opponent, as the defendant.
Now, what are things looking like as far as your side, and how are things looking? What are the positives at this point that you can actually talk about that Alex Haberbusch? It is Haberbusch, isn't it?
Yep, Haberbusch. I'm very pleased with his representation of this case. He's done an excellent job. The judge, on numerous occasions, threatened to dismiss it, but Alexander skillfully presented the legal reasons why he should not, and the judge listened and responded accordingly, and the case did go on to trial, thankfully. So, what was the other part of the question?
The other part of the question is, part of it was that anything that Alex says that you can reveal that's a positive on the case,
yes.
Anything that you can bring forward, things that happened in your favor, that type of thing that you can reveal. Go ahead.
Right. Well, one of the things is that the defense is arguing that this was not intentional. However, according to the legal standard, it's not necessary to prove intentionality in malconduct. Malfeasance, yes, but in this case we're looking at malconduct, and those are two different legal terms from what I understand. So that gives us a stronger position. And the fact that Joanna and, well, the other election employees, Anna Rodriguez, have admitted that they did not properly conduct the election by not following the Secretary of State's mandates for the random alphabet draw is also in our favor. So they've admitted guilt. Obviously, there is an individual who's been harmed. In this case, it would be me. And so it's up to the judge to decide fairly what the proper remedy would be. And all that I'm asking is that I continue on to the November election for a runoff election with Long.
You know what kind of threw me about the whole thing? And living in Reading for 47 years, you know, I've been to a lot of Board of Supervisor meetings, City Council meetings. My partner Wynn and I have been involved in two major court cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so we understand a lot of the things that are going on, but what I really couldn't understand is being here and being in District 2 since 1977, I'm trying to figure out how the hell Long got 50% of the vote. I still can't figure that one out. I mean, not that many people knew who he was. Some of us that have been around a long time would know that he was a police officer. I mean, the only thing I can think of that would be legitimate or something you could really maybe say this is the reason why he got so many votes is the rampant crime in Shasta County, the crime and the homelessness, thinking that maybe a police officer could clean this up. And in saying that, problem is most of those homeless camps, most of that crime, probably 80% of it, is done in the city in the jurisdiction of Reading, not in the county. So even a police officer hired as a county supervisor doesn't have jurisdiction. It goes back again to the uninformed voter who just really doesn't know, and maybe a lot of people that move here are just happy to be here and out of Oakland or L.A. Anyway, what say you?
Well, you know, that is with the assumption that everything was conducted fairly and accurately, that there was no manipulation of the election. And from what I'm seeing, we have evidence otherwise. The fact that the percentages changed so drastically from the first drop, which was the early election day drop, to the election day drop, and then every subsequent drop of votes as it was updated. It started out that Long had 60% of the vote. Then it went down that he actually only had, I think it was 40%, or, you know, it was a huge drop. It was at least 15 percentage point drop. And so you just, in a random election where the ballots come in at random and they're mailed in at random, they're opened at random by the ROV's office, they're delivered at random by the post office. So in that type of scenario, what you should see is that after you reach a certain number of votes, as the numbers of votes come in, it's harder and harder to change the outcome. So the percentage stabilizes around the number, which would be the will of the people. But in this case, we did not see that. Typically, you have a lot of variation in the beginning and then a flat line. In this case, what we saw was a lot of variation. His percentage started very, very high and then went down and down and down and down and down. And the reason why it just mathematically they call it the law of large numbers is once you have, in this race there was only 11,000 votes cast, but say after 1,000 votes have been cast or even 2,000 votes have been cast, one more vote comes in, it only has 1/2,000th of an effect on the total outcome. So you have kind of diminishing returns as far as the effect of new votes coming in. But when we saw these drops coming in and they were so substantially different from one another, it arose suspicion in a lot of people. Now, this evidence is not going to be heard in the court, but that's something that I think needs to be explained.
Yeah, you know, one other thing, too, that kind of puzzles me, and that is that there are people that are, proponents for Mr. Long, and they're talking about how, hey, you didn't just lose by 14, you lost by thousands of votes. That, you know, Long got 50%, he got thousands of votes. Well, if that's the case, then why doesn't he just say, why spend taxpayers' money, why spend money on this thing? Let's just run again. I'm happy if she goes ahead and runs against me again. Why wouldn't he be confident there, and is that something that he is he's kind of looking at right now? What has been any response you can talk about he's had to your court case other than, hey, bring it on, I won by 50%?
You know, that's a very good question and deserves to be answered. He also evaded being served for a very long time, so he was trying to delay and stall the trial from proceeding, which is unfortunate. A public official should have the courage to face such, you know, public servicing of public documents and public scrutiny, right? So I think that the courageous and the right thing to do would be to say, yes, let's go ahead and have a rematch. I'm confident, you know, if I truly am the one selected by the people, then I should have nothing to fear, right? But I think part of the thing is that many people, like you said, just didn't even know who he was. And if given the opportunity to really explain to the people that Alan Long's views are not in line with the majority of Shasta County's views, then I think the people would decide otherwise.
Yeah, again, I don't understand. I don't know if we'll ever understand how he got that amount of the vote. Now, the possibility of a majority might be. But, I mean, the guy didn't do anything, and that's what kind of bothered me about the whole race. The fact that yourself, Dan Sloan, and even Suzanne, you guys were out more in the public arena. You not so much because you were fairly new, but you got a large amount of votes because you were poignant in what you did. You always had good specificity on what you wanted to do. You never beat around the bush. And I'm surprised, again, I'm really in disbelief that this is legitimate just because nobody knows who the hell the guy is. If you're new to this area, you don't know who that guy is.
Yeah, I did knock on quite a few doors, and a lot of people did not know the other candidates. They were surprised to see a candidate knocking on their door. They were, you know, honored by that a lot of times, and that was all it took to get their vote. They said, okay, well, you showed up my doorstep, I'm voting for you. But, yeah, I didn't see many Alan Long signs. He didn't take very many public interviews.
Yeah.
The interviews in which he did take, he said that he trusts the voting machines and the work they do in the elections office. He has no concerns whatsoever, even though a recent Rasmussen poll just came out that said 60 or two-thirds of Americans distrust the election systems and the voting machines. But he, however, is completely confident there's nothing wrong. So he's got a lot of views that are at odds with the majority of Americans in general, but also most certainly the majority of Shasta County residents.
Yeah. Well, and two, probably avoiding the being served and allowing, in, on his behalf, allowing the process to move forward. He's already fully aware that he's going to have to garner even more votes, so that if would he be able to secure the votes that were made for Sloan? Probably not. He might get maybe 50% of that, if that. I'm just guessing, just a wild guess. So
he'll get Barrymore.
And so that would be a wash between the two of you. And then what about Barrymore's votes? How many did she have? So the numbers are there, and they're ripe for the picking. And after all this keeps going out and people actually do vote, and more voters are going to vote in a presidential election than they did in the early primary. That is always a given. So you know that you're going to win that should you be allowed, and hopefully you will be allowed to move forward with that.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, to your point, Wynn, that's a great point. To your point, too, when you look at name recognition, Dan Sloan had a lot more name recognition than Long did. Laura, by the time she got rolling, had more recognition than name recognition. I mean, this is just baloney. There was cheating going on. There's just no, I'll just call it for what it is. I can say it. I'm not going to get in trouble with the judge. And I'll just say it. There was cheating going on. There's no question, no doubt about it. Nobody knew who the hell that guy was. He had five signs up in town. I mean, really, at the very beginning of that election, Dan Sloan had signs everywhere. And people knew him because he was out at Simpson. And they knew of you. You were very active in local politics, Laura, really good in the boards of supervisors, things like that. And the conservative vote really began to see you. And then, you know, as things went on, you were very good, very articulate in what you did. And your voting edge grew, but it grew like it should grow. And Long comes out of nowhere. I mean, come on, they cheated. They cheated. I'm just going to say it. You don't have to say it anyway. I'm kind of going on off a little bit here, but I'm pissed. I'm tired of this.
Well, and it doesn't just affect the candidates. It affects the citizens.
Right.
It affects the future of the board. It affects the future of our entire county. It affects everything. So if we can stop the cheat, even if the vote comes out different than what we like, if it's done fairly, we can live with that. You know, and I'm one of those that, you know, okay, like say I had a campaign, I lost. Okay, if I lost fair and square, okay, I can take that hit, no problem. But if I lose due to the cheat, I have an issue with it. I have an issue with the cheat. Not the fact that I lost. I have an issue with the cheat and the cheaters, and that they're being allowed to do that, and we're paying them to do so. That bothers me to the core, because they're being immoral, unethical, and they're just lying to us, and they're committing fraud. So we need to hold them accountable.
Yes, exactly. And every fraudulent vote that gets accepted and counted disenfranchises a legitimate, lawful vote. And that's the problem. That's the crux of the problem here. And I can just explain a little bit of the data, if you don't mind.
Please do.
Okay, so one of the things that you get as a candidate is the ballot tracks data, or the vote-by-mail ballot abstract, they call it. And you purchase this. It's part of the voter roll. It costs you $40 each time. Candidates will order it, you know, on a periodic basis. And I ordered that throughout the counting, the 23 days of counting. And I ordered the final copy as well, when all the votes were tallied, when all the records have been updated and the official count was made. And what I found was I got a list of voters that did not match the list of votes cast. it was shy of about 500 votes for the whole county, which means these were votes cast that could not be tied to an individual voter. In District 2, there was 167 of those illegitimate votes, where a vote was counted, I don't know, it was basically a ballot that had no name associated with it, right?
Mm.
So where did it come from? And who cast that? Was it cast electronically through their system? What happened there?
What do they call those? Are those phantom ballots, or what do they call those?
I don't know technically what the name is, but basically the best way to refer to them is a vote that was cast that had no voter attached to it. So this is part of the data that's been excluded from being heard in my trial, unfortunately, because the data, the voter roll data, we have 54,000 people that voted in this election. So that Excel file is, if you were to print it out, it's approximately 20,000 pages.
So the voter roll data is being excluded from the court case, but it's needed to certify the election?
Yes.
What the heck?
I don't think they use it specifically to certify the election. It should be part of the certification process, but it's not, to my knowledge.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So we're seeing this in county after county after county. And, in fact, I think Marley Hornick on your program recently did mention this as a systemic problem throughout California.
Right.
Where the numbers are not adding up as they should.
So, Dr. Hobbs, could you shed some light on the batch records and the events that happened in your case with discrepancy around the 100 votes per batch? I think the people would appreciate that.
Yes, I would be happy to. So Joanna got on the stand, and first of all, she testified that the way that they test the machines to make sure they're accurate before counting the election is to take a test deck of ballots and count them by hand. And once they count them by hand, they put them through the machine, and they make sure that those two numbers match. And then she went on to explain that when they are prior to tabulating the ballots, they do not count the number of ballots in each batch. Well, she said that they do count them, but they don't record that number anywhere. And that number is just on a slip of paper that gets stored away with the ballot. And then she was asked further, as Alexander did an amazing job with her on the witness stand, asking her questions in deposition. And he said, well, we don't compare those two numbers. We don't look at the number that the machine tells us and compare it to the number of that we counted for that particular batch. And he said, are you sure you don't compare? No, we don't compare them to you. She repeated herself, we do not compare. And then he went on to say, well, what do you do? And she then brought up an example where they did the 1% canvas. Now, this is after the election, after the machine tally, rather. And the 1% canvas is where they counted by hand. And they found that there was a particular batch where the machine had told them there was 98 ballots in that batch. But when they did the 1% hand count, they found that there was actually 100 ballots in that batch. So the machine had not credited two ballots from that batch. So Alexander Haberbusch further questioned her about what they do in these cases where there's a discrepancy. She said the machine is the more accurate count. So if it's off by two or three votes in each batch, they do not, there's no protocol in place to rectify that. It's not cause for alarm. No, those are my words. I don't have her exact quotes in front of me, but basically each batch could be off by two or three votes.
Oh.
Per batch, and in District 2, we had approximately 117 batches.
Mm.
So you could imagine that number,
yep.
if not accurate, if off by, two to three ballots per batch, you're talking about 200 to 350 ballots that perhaps didn't even get counted. And so, and then Alexander said, well, by what threshold do you instruct your employees to go back and check? So if it's off by 25 ballots, is that what would then trigger them to do a cross check? And she said, no, we have no threshold. And it was very clear that they had no protocol threshold in place. So there's a big problem about the way that they conducted that election and the fact that they did not have a full accounting of the number of ballots in each batch before sending it through the machine.
Hey, Laura.
We're
going to have to take a break. Can you stay with us?
Oh, sorry.
Oh,
yes,
great. Okay, we're going to take a break. So hold your thought, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
One time now. Jefferson, number 51. We believe in freedom, believe in God and guns. We believe in working hard till the working day is done. Teach the children to follow their heart, teach them right from wrong. One day this will be their land, and this will be their song.
Vision returns to Benton Field Airport Sunday, June 16th. It's the local EAA Chapter's Aviation Day from 7 to 2. Start your day with breakfast from 7 to 11, served by the Mount Shasta Chapter of 99s. $8 for adults, $5 for 5 to 12. Kids under 5 free. Airplane and helicopter flights will be available. Admission and parking are free. Come see aircraft of all kinds on display. Bring Dad and the whole family to Benton Field on Father's Day.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
If you are 50 years or older, come down to Wind River Resort and Casino for our Senior Day promotion every Wednesday. Check in at the River Club with your River Club card and play your favorite slot machine to receive 5x points from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. While you're in points, you can put your points back on your slot machine for more playtime or redeem your points for dining vouchers, gas vouchers, or a variety of other prizes. For more information, visit WindRiver.com or call 1-800-280-UWIN. Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
As we all get older, the one constant thing is the aggressive, excessive mail and advertising for Medicare, Medicare supplements, and Medicare Advantage. And almost every one of them is a call center with no idea of what you really need. Siskiyou Insurance has an agent that deals with nothing but Medicare issues and can explain the differences clearly between a Medicare supplement and Medicare Advantage. Call Greg Green at Siskiyou Insurance at 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Yep. I'm glad Wynn didn't dance.
Talking about the election again.
I'm not dancing.
I'm glad Wynn didn't dance here. Christina can dance all she wants. We can watch Christina dance. But Wynn.
Just throw money.
You didn't, buddy. You're good. You've learned not to do that. Just if you've ever money. Seen the movie Hitch.
Just throw money.
Just throw money.
Or in this case, vote.
That's a bad picture.
Or in this case, vote. How's that?
We digress. Welcome back, everybody. Jefferson State of Mind, broadcasting live from KCNR studios in downtown Reading and streaming live at KCNR1460.com. If you have a question, you can call in to 605-4567, area code 530-605-4567, and we are on our way back to
Live
Laura,
radio.
And now we might have an announcement here from Catherine Stainbrook. Okay, Kathy, how are you? We're going to take Kathy's announcement first. How are you, Kathy? How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. And you have an announcement to make?
Yeah. So, anyhow, you had said call in at 9:30, so.
Go for it.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so our precious number 8 grandbaby girl was diagnosed last July with an inoperable brain tumor at the tender age of only 2. And she started chemo last October and recently had a setback, an anaphylactic reaction to the chemotherapy. So we would like to make alternative treatments available for our little gal, as they can be extremely expensive. Little Bear Creek Ranch has generously opened their venue to us to host a fundraiser for a summer hoedown for our little Isla Louise. Chad Bushnell, he's an awesome local country artist from Cottonwood. He will be performing. There will be a raffle auction with supervisors Patrick Jones and Chris Kelstrom. Doors open and music starts at 4 p.m. There will be a barbecue tri-tip with chicken and all the fixins for dinner served at 6 p.m. The cost per person is $40, but if you buy a table of 8, it's only $300.
Nice.
You can drop off any donations for the raffle or purchase your tickets at Jones Fort for now. Or those who'd rather do it remotely can Venmo. That's still being set up. And so good food, good friends, good time for a really good cause.
Really good
cause. Thursday, July 11th. And down for Isla Louise at Little Bear Creek Ranch in Anderson. We hope to see you all there.
You bet, Kathy. Thanks for calling in. And, yeah, folks, we need to reach out and support that. Kathy, go ahead and text me if you guys need more stuff. We can get the word out for getting more auction items, whatever you need, my dear. And bless you, and our prayers are with you and your granddaughter. And thank you for calling in. So
thanks, love. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye, Kathy.
Bye. Yeah.
Laura.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
We're back.
Yes. Yeah, that was that was Kathy. I'm sure you heard the announcement. And it's really...
Well, I couldn't hear it on my end.
Oh, you couldn't. Okay. Anyway, there's a fundraiser they're having.
And I hope people will support them.
Oh, yeah. The fundraiser should be great. We got the details of that. And we'll be continuing to give the details on that. And we'll get that to Carl Bott, too, so he can give
share
details
that
on that.
Sure. Yep.
You bet. And our next program, too. Anyway, Laura, we were talking on a certain subject, and because I have the attention span of a gnat... I kind of forgot it a little bit.
That's all right.
Bring us back home, darling.
Okay. Basically, Joanna testified that 2 to 3 ballots per batch was not significant enough for them to attend to and to make sure those numbers matched. And she was completely reliant on the 1% canvas to draw her attention to any of those mistakes. But, of course, the 1% canvas does not recount all the batches in that election. And except for the case, not to confuse people, but in Kevin's recall, they did do nearly a 100%, even though they called it a 1% canvas.
Now, didn't they do that in the course of the election when, before they even had it all counted, they were already starting the 1% count again?
Yes.
So they didn't even know what they had. So they were counting it twice simultaneously. Is that correct?
What a bunch of crooks.
Yeah, well, they counted 100% of what they had at the time. So since it wasn't a 100% recount, they said it was just the 1% canvas. There was no charge to the No on Recall campaign, which I suspect were the ones that requested that recount.
Oh, I'm
sure. So
they
basically got a free recount from the county.
Of course.
Whereas for me, they wanted to charge $8,600 just for the first day.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, when Mark Kent was looking at that, a couple years ago, it was $11,000 a day for him to do that. And he's like, yeah, no, I don't think so.
Yeah. But so what happens when you're off by 2 to 3 ballots per batch, it amounts to quite a lot. I was saying between 200 and 350 ballot difference, potentially. And this race was decided by only 14 votes.
Right.
So if you want people to trust elections, you have to be exact precise and accurate. And what she testified to is a lack of accuracy, a lack of record keeping, and cross-checking.
So sounds like bookkeeping 101 was failed by the ROV office. I mean, you debit, you credit, it balances. You know, you figure it out, you know, what you have coming in, what you have going out. And if there's a discrepancy, you find it, figure it out, and you address it. It just sounds like bookkeeping 101 to me, that they just cannot account for any of what they're doing. And so we shouldn't trust them for doing it.
Yeah, you know, and another thing, too, it goes back to what Kevin Cry was talking about in his program this morning. Well, we should throw this out to the people. The people don't know this stuff. If you don't, if you are electing somebody and they're a criminal, or they've done something criminally, I mean criminally, or it's even an allegation, if people don't know it, they're not going to know any better. They're going to go with the general. I mean, you can't see, that's one of the problems that we have a lot of times when we elect people who are in a position to where they're smart, but they're pretty green. And you can't demagogue down the road. If you don't know the Constitution, then shame on you. You don't know the California Constitution, you're elected official, shame on you.
Yeah, you took an oath to both.
And you don't, and if you don't know what's going on, how can you possibly even understand that? I mean, if you have to understand what your jurisdiction is. And I mean, all this done on the fly and the 5,000 different things, very frustrating. Anyway, Citizen Tim has a couple of things he wanted to bring up to you, Laura. So, Citizen Tim, here's your time, but it's a prerequisite that you have to smile. So, we don't allow people in here that have been weaned on a pickle.
All right. So, as a man on the street, I'm a little concerned if there's a batch of 100 votes and only 98 of them are counted, and that comes to be 200 to 300 votes that haven't been counted at all, and we're just looking at one race, isn't the all the races of that same day in question now? Was there other batch errors? And how do we know?
Yep, that's a very good question, Tim. And I appreciate you asking it, because one of the reasons that you can cross-check an election, or one of the ways, I should say, that you can cross-check is through the audit log. However, another thing that Joanna testified is that they do not look at the audit log before certifying the election. The audit log tells you exactly what happened when. It's almost like being an election observer in a way, almost as if you were actually right there watching them. It tells you exactly what buttons were pressed, what commands were given, when the batches were created, how many ballots were in each batch. Whether the batch was saved or discarded. So there's issues there. There were batches that I feel could have potentially been wrongfully discarded, which is a whole other issue that we haven't addressed in the courtroom yet, but I feel it needs to be addressed. That audit log is approximately 375,000 lines, and if you print it out, it's approximately 90,000 pages. So that's another document which we had trouble getting admitted to the court as evidence, because typically the judges are used to working with paper documents. They want to know what page it's on. We don't have a page number to direct them to. A lot of times the analysis is a summation of all the data that's on that file. And so you can't just point to page 59, and that's where the problem lies. So that's one of the hurdles we faced in this election contest challenge that we brought before the court.
Okay, hey, Laura, I have a quick question. Why would there be 90,000 lines of data when there are only maybe at most 120,000 ballots cast?
This is an audit log, so every time they press a button, it creates a new line in the audit log. So if they click OK, it's a new line.
Okay.
So we did have a witness testify, and he got qualified as an expert witness for big data analysis because he has plenty of credentials in that area. And he did testify to his analysis of this data. And one of the things he brought up was the time changes, because if you look at the official statement of votes, which Joanna Francesca signed, she notated that three of the tabulators, three out of four, had clocks that did not properly update for daylight saving. But if you look at the audit log, it tells you exactly when changes were made to the internal clock. And each tabulator had between three and eight changes made to it. And those changes would vary between minutes to hours to 24 hours. So these were not all in one-hour increments. You would expect for a time change you would see a change, one change of 1 hour. But here we're talking about two to eight changes per tabulator of different increments of time. And this is important because the audit log tells you, like I said, what happens when. It should be a record in chronological order that can enable you to go back and audit the election to make sure everything was conducted properly. And one entry, it just doesn't make sense. It says that there was somebody working there in the elections office, I think it was at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., and which, you know, we when the clocks are not set properly, it leads to more questions than answers when you're reviewing the audit log.
I've got a question for you. When the Board of Supervisors certified the vote, 4-1, is there any teeth to that? Is there anything as far as them certifying it, and do they really necessarily have to, by law, certify the vote for it to even mean anything? Or is it just, going through the motions? Is there any teeth in that with them certifying or not certifying a vote? And if there is teeth to it, if they did not certify a vote, then what would be the ramifications?
I applaud Patrick Jones for not certifying it. If I were a board member myself and I were asked to certify an election, you have to sign your name that you can certify that, to the best of your knowledge, that the results were true and correct. The board members were all given evidence prior to certification that there were things that were not right about this election, that were not adding up. Audit logs, cast vote records were being held, and they weren't being given to the public to actually do this important auditing prior to the certification. These are all serious red flags that if I were a supervisor, I would not sign my name off to that.
I guess the question is, would it matter? I mean, if they don't certify it or they do certify it, legally, does it matter? If they don't certify the vote, does it still go through? I mean, is there any teeth to what they do with the certification? That's the question.
Ultimately, I'm not the authority to answer that. ROV's office will say no, it doesn't matter. That's what they told the board members.
Okay.
I don't believe that.
By
California law, I believe it's Government Code Section 25201.
Right.
The Board of Supervisors have the authority to canvass all elections.
Right.
So they are the ultimate authority in charge as far as I am concerned. Now, what would happen on the statewide level, I'm not sure if that would then, if the Secretary of State would just accept it and move on, or if it would then lead to a legal contest between the county and the state. I do not know the answer to that. We would have to ask an election lawyer or somebody who specializes in that.
No, what you do is you actually do it, and then the state will be coming knocking on your door, and then you'll know whether it's going to be a legal action or not. We do the right thing 100% of the time and not worry about the ramifications from the state or from, you know, all the naysayers. We do the right thing every single time, every action. And elections have consequences. So if you're voting people in, not upholding, you know, things like this, which is huge, this is enormous. This is what the whole game is about, elections. And if we can't even get people voted into our current office that are going to stand up and fight back on this, then what are they doing there?
Exactly. And that's why I'm bringing this case forth, because I can't do a very good job as a representative if I don't fight when I need to fight for what's right and what's correct.
That's correct.
And I hope that people will see that.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talking about, how conservatives eat their own and how we're all fighting amongst ourselves and the Democrats really don't do it. I don't think that's as prevalent as a lot of people, especially in this community and in our county, are making that. I think a lot of it is that, you know, you're either going to do the right thing or you're not. And it, so if you're an elected official, and in some people's eyes you don't do the right thing, you shouldn't be criticized. If you don't certify a vote, then that's the conservatives eating their own. If you agree on certain positions of people, and you agree with them and they're moderate or whatever, and the conservative people are saying we don't agree with that, are they turning on you? And I think I'm getting a little bit upset about hearing some of our politicians in town talk about the fact that, hey, gee whiz, you know, we all need to get along. So I know, let's have people on from the other side. Let's talk to the people on the other side. I'm okay with all that. I'm just saying, hey, you know, if in fact this stuff, this non-certification, all these different things, oh, you know, we're eating our own and stuff and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just like a lot of times we have, we're talking about city issues and we're in the county. You don't have anything to do with the city issues.
No jurisdiction.
There's no jurisdiction
right.
in the city.
Right.
Which is another good reason why because people are uneducated on how things work. And that's not a bad thing. It just is. Well, maybe it's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Point being is that it gets very frustrating when your conservative, quote, elected officials, quote, start saying, oh, you know, we're starting to eat our own because somebody doesn't agree with you. And not only that, but what if they prove you wrong?
Yeah.
You know, it's time to come back and eat a little crow and say, hey, I screwed up. So is there anything else on your court case that you think is going to be really impactful going forward?
Well, I feel like the problem is in our election system is that people who get elected through this system, they never complain. They never say there's something wrong. It's only the people whose contests are jeopardized that actually come forward and challenge the system and challenge the status quo. And I think we need to see more cases like this come forth because the system is not working. The system is broken. It needs to be examined. And I think a court is a good place to hear these cases and to receive justice. And I'm hoping and expecting justice to be served in this case. And this is an expensive case to litigate. I'm proud to say that it's been 100% grassroots funded. If folks want to donate, I'm recommending them to either go to my website or go to lexrec.org, go to lexrec.org/donate. Right now they're having a matching contribution where anything that you donate will be doubled. Those are the folks that are representing me in court, and that's my biggest need for funds at this moment is for the legal expenses.
Laura, as a member of the public, you've brought up things that are concerning to me where it seems like the votes that are cast by the people are not necessarily accurately counted by the ROV's office. And that, to me, that seems like there's a need for more investigation and that elected officials ought to be very concerned as the people seem to be disenfranchised from their right to elect who they choose to be their supervisors and in other positions.
Exactly. And as Marley Hornick was saying the other day on the program, this is a civil rights issue. If we have our votes cast and they're not counted and properly recorded, we've been disenfranchised and we're no longer, as this country, we are represented by our representatives. And if we don't have the right to choose our representatives, then we're not living in a free country anymore. So it's a serious issue. And I hope that it will be addressed. And the best way, in my opinion, to address this is to go back to hand counting. And we have an opportunity now for a new ROV in this county. I've looked at the list of applicants, and I believe that Clint Curtis would be the best one qualified. He's got over 20 years of experience going to both sides of the aisle and complaining, saying we need to get rid of these machines. We need to have hand counting and fairness and transparency and accuracy. So I support him, and that's coming up for folks who are listening. The interviews will be next week at the Board of Supervisors Chambers. I believe Tuesday, Thursday and Friday, or I'm not sure the exact days. But
no, it'll be
start on Tuesday.
Tuesday and Wednesday are the interview dates.
Okay, Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah. They moved the regular board meeting up to Monday instead of on normal Tuesday date time. They moved it up to Monday. They're going to do their business then. And then they start the interviews for the ROV on Tuesday. And then whatever they don't get through on Tuesday, they'll carry over to Wednesday. But most likely they'll get through all of them. And then if they have additional questions, they're going to bring them back on Wednesday and ask the additional questions.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get an answer about that. Clint Curtis is an interesting guy. We've interviewed him a couple of times.
Yeah.
And sat down with him a couple of times. And it's funny because this fix on the machine, we wouldn't even have fixes on the machines, wouldn't have this problem if it wasn't for Clint following that great conservative patriot, Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
And Jeb Bush is the one who put him up to it.
Yep.
And that kind of pissed Clint off, and that's why he left the Republican Party, you know.
Well, and he went before Congress stating the facts. We have the video, and he's willing to share that video when he went before Congress and told them how the cows ate the cabbage regarding using machines years ago. So before we were actually even using machines here in Shasta County. So truly, we should not be using machines in Shasta County.
Yeah, and whoever they pick, and I'm sure that they'll come to a good consensus. You hope and pray they did. They did with Rickard. I think they did a good job with our, not Supervisor Rickard.
CEO.
CEO.
Mr. Rickard, yep.
Yeah, they did a good job with him, and I think he's doing a great job.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll have something happen here. We've got about 4 minutes left. Is there anything else you want to add to what's happening with your court case, or anything you want to add, Laura?
Well, I'll just go back to my standard plug that I'm encouraging people at this next election to vote a precinct ballot. Go to the precinct, leave your envelope at home, leave your ballot at home if you wish to, but go to the precinct, vote in person, and turn that ballot in naked, not with the envelope, because what happens when you do that is that it delays the results. It won't be counted that evening. It has to go through a checkpoint, and it could be challenged. But if you go and vote in person, there's no way that that vote is going to be challenged. Once you sign the poll pad or the paper poll book, your vote has been accepted. So I'm encouraging people to vote a precinct ballot on Election Day, and if you could, if you're able to, donate to lexrex.org/donate for this cause of election transparency and accuracy, and also a potential opportunity to maintain a conservative board majority with the Board of Supervisors. I'd appreciate that very much.
Well, Laura, we want to thank you a lot for coming on, and thank you for everything you do. I hope everything goes well with your dad. We'll be praying for you.
Thank you, and happy Father's Day to everybody.
Well,
thank you.
That's great. I think I'm going to be useless today. How about you, Tim? Going to be useless
today?
What are you laughing about, Christina?
She knows.
I have enough dealing with them, you know. I don't get any respect.
So, Laura, thank you for your time, and we hope to see you back up here shortly.
And thank you, Citizen Tim.
Thank you, Tim, for coming in. Hanging out
with
us.
It was his, welcome. It was his first start of the season.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, folks, looks like we're wrapping it up here. Laura, thanks again. And time
has come. For 51.
For the 51.
Let's get it done.
Not 52, 51.
Hey, CA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? It's not our bill. We have no say. You don't serve us. You serve LA. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind. You don't know us. You have no clue. You're telling us what to do. We don't know you or what you face. It's time to start a brand new state. The time
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.